Good afternoon. It is Friday, March 24th, 2023. This is the Senate Commerce and Consumer Protection Committee. A quorum is present, and we are here on Senate File 2219. Senator Klein.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee. Senate File 2219 will be the vehicle bill for the Commerce Omnibus Policy Bill this session. I want to thank the Chair and the Committee for spending this session together and looking through all these bills in a very careful way. I think we've come up with a really excellent bill. Council will, at the next step here, walk through the bill for the members. But first, Madam Chair, I would like to offer the A2 delete everything amendment.
Thank you. Senator Klein offers the A2 amendment, which is in our packets, to the amendment. Oh, all in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The amendment is passed. Senator Klein.
Yeah, with that, Madam Chair, I would like to turn it over to Mr. Hudala to walk through the bill.
Mr. Hudala.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. The A2 amendment to Senate File 2219 is a delete everything amendment, which incorporates 17 different bills, each of which has already been heard by this committee. This amendment contains only policy that does not have a cost associated with it. I will very briefly walk through each of the sections of the amendment and the bills corresponding to those respective sections as well. There should be a summary chart in each member packet that I would note that contains similar information. You should be able to use this chart for reference throughout the hearing, and I'd of course be happy to answer any questions afterwards that members may have as well. So starting my walkthrough first, at section one of the DE amendment is Senate File 6. That bill prohibits the sale of essential consumer goods and services for unconscionably excessive prices during abnormal market disruption. I would also note that the governor is authorized by the provisions in this section to declare abnormal market disruptions for such goods and services caused by an event that results in a declaration of a state of emergency. Moving on to section two of the amendment, that is Senator Rasmussen's Senate File 1866. I'd also know that a provision of that bill is in section 44 of the amendment. However, that section 44 relates to a repealer portion of the bill. These provisions modify other provisions of law governing emergency closures of financial institutions, and this language further eliminates certain examination requirements for such financial institutions. Sections 3 through 5 of the amendment, as well as sections 25 and 26, relate to Senator Zhang, Senate File 2046. These provisions establish language relating to the that govern the sale of certain motor vehicles, in particular provisions relating to disclosures and written warranties that must be provided to a customer in those scenarios. Sections 6 through 9 of the amendment, which start on page 3, line 4, for those of you who are following along, are another Senator Zhang bill. That is Senate File 1662, which creates corporate compliance requirements for covered institutions, as covered institutions are defined in that in the provisions of that bill. The requirements that are put in place are focused on internal procedural safeguards to maintain sufficient liquidity and financial stability while minimizing and managing risk. Such safeguards include internal and external audits, mandated board of directors, and annual risk assessment. Sections 10 and 11 of the DE amendment relate to Senate File 1871, which was offered by Senator Zhang. It provides that a life insurance policy or certificate issued or delivered in Minnesota may exclude or restrict liability for any death benefit if the insured dies as a result of suicide within 1 year from the date of the issue of the policy or certificate. This is as compared with the language in existing state law, which goes to 2 years from issuance. So it restricts the benefits payable to the beneficiaries from 2 years down to 1 year. Sections 12 to 16 of the DE amendment, which start on page 11, line 1, are Senator Wicklund, Senate File 1265. These provisions make changes to the requirements and contracts between a dentist or dental clinic and dental organizations. These changes relate to disclosures of fees, methods of payment, and a dental organization allowing third parties access to a dentist or dental clinic's contract services or discounts. Moving along to section 17, that's Senator Zhang's Senate File 1089, which creates a new statute of limitations of 6 years. That statute of limitations relates to civil actions under plans of reparation security for auto insurance in the state. Senator Zhang's Senate File 266 is discussed next in the DE amendment. That begins on section 18, as well as in section 42, which I would point out is an uncodified section of law relating to rulemaking. Specifically, Senate File 266 modifies the investment limit for small corporate offerings, and it also directs related rulemaking such that the Department of Commerce regulations must conform to the prescribed investment limit for such securities offerings. In Section 19, as well as later in the DE amendment, specifically Sections 29 to 36, is Senator Kunesh's Senate File 1472. This starts on page 18, line 4 of the amendment. This language modifies rules and conditions under which a manufactured home park owner may charge residents for utility services. Specifically, the modifications include changes which would limit the charges that may be imposed on park residents to solely administrative utility fees, as well as fees for the owner's use of utilities, and to require utility measuring devices to be installed by certain licensed individuals. I would also note in connection with this bill, there is a repealer as well, and that is located in Section 44 of the amendment. Section 20 relates to Senator Klein's Senate File 1451. This modifies existing state law to incorporate express authorization for tribal governments in the state's government telecommunications pricing plans. Section 21 is Senator Rasmussen's Senate File 1868. It also includes a repealer in Section 44 of the amendment. This bill eliminates the statutory strict liability prohibition against selling gasoline below cost. And related to that, it deletes a provision which specifically defines the cost of gasoline. Section 22 is Senator Dreheim's Senate File 252. Which authorizes the Attorney General to sue for and recover on behalf of the state a civil penalty from a person found to have violated Minnesota's unlawful robocall statute. That civil penalty for those violations has been increased through this language to $100,000. Section 23 is Senator Kupak's Senate File 1598. This language starts on page 20, line 25 of the amendment, and it requires an original equipment manufacturer to generally make available to the digital electronic equipment's owners or an independent repair provider documentation, parts, and tools for certain purposes, those purposes being diagnostic, maintenance, or repair. The bill further requires such an original equipment manufacturer to similarly make available documents and parts needed to reset an electronic security lock or other security-related function when the lock or function is disabled. Section 29 of the amendment is Senator Klein's Senate File 1138, which establishes various protections for consumers who submit biological samples to direct-to-consumer genetic testing companies. This bill requires testing companies to obtain the consumer's express consent, provides privacy notices to the consumer, and also protects the security of the consumer's genetic data from unauthorized disclosures. Moving along to Section 28, which begins on page 35, line 5 of the amendment, the Senator Zhang Senate File 1565. which requires sellers and lessors of goods and services to notify customers of credit or charge card surcharges via certain methods, which methods do slightly differ based on whether the sale is in person, via website, or over the phone. Five sections, specifically sections 37 to 41, are covered by Senator Gustafson, Senate File 2712. That bill prohibits a person from causing another person to incur coerced debt and provides for debtor relief from creditors in the event the debtor has incurred coerced debt. Such relief includes, among other forms of relief, one, a declaratory judgment that the debt is coerced debt, two, an injunction prohibiting a creditor from holding the debtor liable for the debt or enforcing a judgment relating to the coerced debt, and finally, three, an order dismissing any cause of action previously brought by a creditor to enforce or collect the coerced debt from the debtor. And then finally, at section 43 of the bill, you'll see five uncodified sections of law. Those five sections were offered by Senator Daines in Senate File 1772. And most notably, they require the Commission of Commerce to amend department rules through expedited rulemaking to, one, require the commissioner's grant of automotive self-insurance authority to an applicant to be based on that applicant's net working capital in lieu of the existing provision, which is the applicant's net fund flow. Two, it permits the commissioner to grant automotive self-insurance authority to an applicant that is not a political subdivision and that meets certain positive net income or positive working capital requirements. And three, to define in the department's rules working capital for the purpose of implementing these rules. Again, there is information in each of your member packets that goes through this in detail. Hopefully you find that helpful. And I, of course, will am happy to answer any questions that members might have. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hudala. That was a very helpful walkthrough. Any questions from members? All right, seeing no questions, we'll move on to testifiers. Senator Daines, where is he? Is he online?
Yes.
Okay, Senator Daines, you have your hand up. I'm sorry, I didn't see you.
I'll pass if you want to have the testifiers go first. I'll just pass till.
Okay, thank you, Senator Daines. We'll move on to testifiers then. I believe our first testifier is Tim Gross. All right, welcome. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Tim Gross. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Petroleum Marketers Association. Our association represents the 400 fuel marketers and fuel distributors who own and operate the majority of the 2,500 convenience stores, truck stops, and refueling sites found throughout Minnesota. I am here today to voice my opposition to the section of the amendment that repeals a decades-old statute that addresses unlawful gasoline sales. The supporters of this proposed language have stated two reasons for its repeal. One, it will lower the price of gasoline, and two, provides for free and open trade. Repealing the current law will not lower the price of gasoline. We have proven that there are no connection or direct relationships to the measure used to prove predatory pricing and the price the consumer pays at the pump. We have shown that only healthy, vibrant competition guaranteed by protecting small fuel businesses from below-cost selling ensures the lowest price to consumers. The current statute in no way affects price. It only protects small businesses from bad retail actors. Addressing the free and open trade, supporters of the repeal state the need for free and open trade. I, the association, and its members also have a similar belief. We believe in free, open, and fair trade. Let me give you some examples. I am a small fuel retailer. A new competitor enters the market that brings innovation, new products, outstanding service, advanced technology, and invest in all the endeavors. I cannot match these great attributes this new competitor brings into the market, and I am forced to close. That is normal, healthy, and legal competition that emphasizes free and open trade. Now the other example. A new competitor enters the market who does nothing the competitor I just described strives to accomplish. They take the easy, lazy, and illegal method of competing by lowering its price of gasoline below my cost. Their deep pockets will outlast the losses I experience. Quickly, within months, I am out of business. This is not free and open trade. And ultimately, the consumer loses by paying higher gas prices by a lack of competition in the market. This is what the current law addresses and protects against. If the repeal of Minnesota Statute 325D.71 is successful, within a short time, we must be ready to answer two questions for Minnesota's fuel consumers. One, why did we not accomplish the lowering of gasoline prices across the state? And two, why did we choose not to protect small neighborhood fuel retailers from going out of business due to illegal below-cost practices? Thank you, Madam Chair, and the members of the committee for your time and consideration not supporting the repeal of the current below-cost selling law.
Thank you, Mr. Gross. Our next testifier is Tyler Deers, and if Sarah Pisick could be on deck, ready to go after Mr. Deers. Mr. Deers, thank you for being here. Please state your name and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Tyler Deers. I serve as the Midwest Executive Director for TechNet. TechNet is a technology trade association representing over 100 innovative companies. I know I went over my allotted time yesterday, so I'll do my best to yield that back to you all today, so I'll try to be brief. We are before you today in opposition to the digital fare repair provisions that are included in this omnibus bill. Many of you have come to know this issue as a contentious issue over the years. And while it is a big issue that has national ramifications, we have seeded the advice of lawmakers from both sides of the aisle to try and work together with the advocates to get to an agreed bill. I understand that in other states, this issue has taken a different path, but I want to assure members of this committee that here in Minnesota, we are working with the advocates in good faith to find a bill that works for everyone, a bill that protects the integrity of the devices that are sold in this state, a bill that protects the privacy of your constituents, all while giving the advocates what they sought out to achieve. Since the last time this bill was heard before this committee, the industry has identified areas of the bill that we agree with the proponents, as well as areas of the bill that need some further discussion and areas that may be controversial. But those are issues that I'm confident that we can mend. I believe we are close to finding that peace in the valley. I am bullish on us finding common ground, and I don't recall a state in which that was ever the case. Minnesota has the opportunity to be a leader and a model on this issue for the rest of the country. So we are asking to give us some more time and to encourage all parties to continue to work together. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Deers. Next is Sarah Sick, and if J.R. Burke could come forward and be on deck ready to go. Thanks. Ms. Sick.
Hi. Chair Klein, Chair Seberg, and members of the committee, my name is Sarah Pisick. And I'm here on behalf of CTIA, the trade association for the wireless telecommunications industry. I'm speaking in opposition to the digital fare repair provisions included in the bill, but I want to echo Tyler's comments about working on trying to find resolution. But I want to just speak to what is that in the bill still and our concerns with that. So the marketplace already provides a wide range of consumer choice for electronic product repair without the mandates included in the legislation. For example, manufacturers have relationships with authorized repair providers. These providers, which include local small businesses, have received the appropriate training from manufacturers to help ensure that repairs are done properly and safely. Manufacturers also offer walk-in repair options at retail as well as mail-in services. Additionally, insurance providers offer repair options for consumers, including authorized third-party remote technicians that will travel to consumers to perform repairs. Manufacturers have expanded repair options for consumers, from growing the number of authorized repair providers to increasing tools, access to tools, parts, and manuals directly to consumers. To further address the repair marketplace, CTIA launched two programs. One for repair technicians and one for retailers. These programs educate and test wireless repair technicians on industry-recognized standards. We're concerned that the provisions included in the bill would have unintended consequences of eliminating the need for repairers to demonstrate to consumers that they have the technical competence to perform safe, secure, and reliable repairs. Consumers expect and rely on the safety and security of their electronic products. So we have concerns that the provisions included in the omnibus bill would cause safety, privacy, and security risks and compromise consumer safety and protection. So for those reasons, we oppose the current version, but hope that we can find resolution with the advocates as well. So thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Pasick, and I apologize for mispronouncing your name.
It's a hard one.
Next is J.R. Burke, and if David Fitch could come forward and be ready to testify next. Mr. Burke, please state your name and proceed with the testimony.
Madam Chair and members, for the record, my name is J.R. Burke. I represent Polaris. In addition to ATVs, snowmobiles, and boats, Polaris has long been a motorcycle manufacturer. Our Indian and Slingshot brands of motorcycles are serviced by small, independently owned dealers across the state. We're also members of the Motorcycle Industry Council, which represents some of the largest global motorcycle manufacturers themselves, also partnering with small businesses across the state to distribute motorcycles across every corner of Minnesota. Our paramount interest in Section 23, which is the digital repair section, is the safety of our customers, and is precisely why we're here today. As I previously mentioned to this committee, Polaris is grateful to Senator Kupak for his openness to stakeholder input through this process and his commitment to making the bill better, but there's still work to be done, specifically with respect to some inconsistencies in the treatment of certain motor vehicles in the definition for motor vehicle. Under current Minnesota law, motor vehicles are defined generally as products that operate on roads. These might include things that we all know of, passenger cars, SUVs, trucks, and motorcycles, which includes autocycles, which is a subset of motorcycle that Polaris produces. While unique in certain respects, each of these products share some notable similarities. One, operators need to obtain a license. Two, operation is on our roadways. Three, they meet federal motor vehicle safety standards that are administered by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, and they are compliant with the Clean Air Act under the EPA. It's also important to know that each of these products is defined under Minnesota Chapter 168 as motor vehicles, and they long have been. But contrary to the longstanding treatment, the vast majority of these products I listed are excluded from the bill except motorcycles. This subjects manufacturers like Polaris and others to disclose their now proprietary information to owners and independent repair providers were this bill to pass, as is. We feel this is not consistent with longstanding Minnesota law, treatment of other similar products in this legislation, or as we believe, our shared objective of ensuring our customers' safety and that of the environment. It's our hope that the author and the committee will strike the term a motorcycle from line 23.12 in the delete all amendment to this bill. And as has been noted in the discussion on digital repair, there has been similar legislation passed, including in New York, that does exclude motorcycles. It was part of the governor's chapter amendment agreement with the legislature when she signed the bill in March. Chair Klein, members, as written, the bill would allow untrained owners and independent repair shops to perform repairs on motorcycles as they would be allowed for any number of consumer products under this bill. It does not logically follow that one would treat as equal the safety implications associated with having access to repair information for any of the products that might be covered under the current definitions and that of a motorcycle that operates on our roadways. I urge your support to amend the legislation to exclude motorcycles, and thank you for giving me the chance to visit with you and share our perspective.
Thank you, Mr. Burke. I'm not seeing David Fitch. Oh, now I do see David Fitch.
Thank you.
And if Andrew O'Connor can be come forward and be ready to testify next. Mr. Fitch, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
I am David Fitch, and I am with the Minnesota Technology Systems and Technology Association. We are, to make it simple, the alarm industry in the state of Minnesota. And the reason I came before this committee today is just to point out that digital fare repair, as written right now, becomes a direct conflict if passed in its form, current form, with state law, which is 326B, that licenses our industry and the other technology systems industry in the state of Minnesota. It prevents unlicensed people from doing any of our work or laying out these systems, altering them, installing them, servicing, whatever. So what we have asked for permission, and we have it was granted by Senator Kupak that we formulate an amendment that would in fact do that. We have done that in two forms, one less specific than the other, and submitted it. Now, my understanding is the committee hasn't seen it yet, but it is in process, and we're asking that this be considered as we move forward here in the process. And any questions, I'll be happy to answer. Otherwise, I thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fish. Andrew O'Connor, please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Andrew O'Connor. I am here on behalf of the Entertainment Software Association. We represent video game console makers and game publishers. We're here to respectfully oppose Section 23 regarding the digital fare repair of this bill. I first want to acknowledge, I echo my colleagues in the industry, and we've had some very productive conversations with both the original bill sponsor and the proponents of the legislation. Those conversations are ongoing. I am very confident that we can find an agreement, and I appreciate all the time and kind of space that we've been given to work that through and work through some issues and find a solution. I've testified before you all before, and I'll just reiterate that our concerns mainly lie with the lack of copyright protections in this legislation for an industry that relies on our copyright protections for both the game consoles and the games published to be played on those consoles. We rely on that protection and need to be protected against piracy and other things that threaten our industry. So I echo all those concerns. I've submitted written testimony, and I thank you again for giving me the time to testify.
Thank you, Mr. O'Connor. Senator Klein.
Madam Chair, thank you. Before we go to amendments, I just want to respond to a couple of the testifiers. Very grateful for the representatives from the tech and motorcycle and alarm industry and others who came forward to speak about digital fare repair. It's my understanding that they continue to work with the author and with proponents of the legislation to find compromise language. This committee, of course, very much respects when industry players can resolve issues amongst themselves and not have us adjudicate those disputes. So I look forward to this bill, this portion of the bill being improved going forward.
Thank you, Senator Klein. Are there any members of the public who wish to testify? Seeing none, moving on to amendments. Senator Rasmussen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move the A10 amendment. I'm happy to describe it.
Senator Rasmussen moves the A10. Will you describe your amendment, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so this amendment would add back, actually, the underlying legislation that the DE replaced. It would add back in the Strengthening Minnesota Homes Program, which is a grant to homeowners to either construct or rebuild to the IBHS standard. An example of that would be a fortified roof. This would also include a mandatory insurance premium discount. In addition, there is some language included on assignment of benefits reform. All of this has been discussed with the Department of Commerce, insurance industry stakeholders, and construction stakeholders, and there's, I'm happy to say, peace in the valley on this language.
Senator Klein.
Thank you, Chair Seeberger and Senator Rasmussen. Yes, this is acceptable language to the department and also to me as the author. And I should just point out to members that the Fortified Home Program has a policy aspect, which is being carried here in this amendment, and also a fiscal aspect, which will be carried in the Energy Committee of Senator Frentz. And so I consider this a friendly amendment.
Thank you, Senator Klein. Any further discussion? All right. Senator Dames.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and I'd like to introduce the A6 amendment.
All right, Senator Dames, before we do that, we're going to vote on Senator Rasmussen's A10 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion is adopted. The amendment is adopted. All right, Senator Dames, to your amendment.
I was, Madam Chair, for getting ahead of the vote there. I would like to introduce the A6 amendment, and I can explain that when you'd like me to.
All right, Senator Dames offers the A6 amendment. Please explain your amendment, Senator Dames. Thanks.
The A6 amendment is a amendment to change the date in relationships to Section 43 and 44, which was on the self-insurance aspect. Currently, the policy or the bill here shows it would be in June, I believe, of 2023. This language would change it to this section is effective the day following enactment, and that hasn't been agreed upon by the various players.
Thank you, Senator Dames. Senator Klein.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a friendly amendment, and it just changes the enactment date, members.
Any further discussion on the A6 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The amendment is adopted. Senator Dames.
Madam Chair, I would also like to introduce the A3 amendment. I do not have a copy in front of me, but I can explain what the A3 amendment does.
Okay, to your amendment, Senator Dames.
The A3 amendment will remove the section pertaining to the, it would be the fuel standards, and that should be on section 21 of the bill, and it will remove the statute from that. I think members should have a letter from the former Attorney General, Mike Hatch. He was the Attorney General when this statute was originally put in place back in 2001. And the reason it was put in place was to enforce the consumer laws that prohibited competitive practices at work where the cost of fuel was being charged. I've been through enough of these ups and downs in the prices of fuel and watched what happened, and I remember in 2001 when this process was going on. My concern is by removing this statute, we're going to open up the pricing that is allowed, and we're going to cause the same problems we had back in 2001 and many other times prior to that. And this law in 2001 did take care of that. When we look at this, and I know that the author of this bill put this in certainly under a good premise of that he feels this is something that we should be doing, and I fully understand. What I see here is, over the years, we've passed a lot of statutes that deal with fuel pricing and things like that. So what we're looking at doing with this statute, in my opinion, is making a purer market and letting the market decide the price. But it's really hard to have that happen when you have so many other pieces that are influenced. I think if we're going to do something like this, we need to do some research to see what all impacts that price, more so than just the statute dealing with the price. So therefore, I would ask that the members support this amendment and that remove that piece from this bill. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Dames. Senator Rasmussen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I appreciate Senator Dames and the conversations we've had on repealing the minimum markup on gasoline sales. I would respectfully ask members to oppose the amendment. The reason that I've decided to bring this bill and appreciate this committee's discussion on this bill is that by repealing the minimum markup on gas, we're really repealing a hidden gas tax, and it's going to help save consumers money at the pump. I have a lot of retailers in the district that I represent, and I want them to be successful. And so this is the concerns that have been brought are ones that I've taken very seriously. The good news for us here is that there's about 40 states currently that do not have a minimum markup on gasoline. And the Federal Trade Commission has reviewed this issue extensively. And I just want to talk a little bit about the work that they've done, because I think it's important to inform how we talk about this today. Within the Federal Trade Commission, the Bureau of Competition, the Bureau of Economics, and the Office of Policy Planning have all reviewed minimum markup laws as a part of their review of mergers of diversified energy companies, including petroleum refineries and marketing businesses, which would be gas stations. They've investigated and conducted workshops on proposed regulations regarding motor fuel pricing. The Commission has completed investigations into spikes of gasoline prices in the Midwest, on the West Coast markets. They've held two public conferences to examine the factors that affect prices of refined petroleum products in the United States. They have offered comments as states have proposed either enacting or repealing various aspects of gasoline sales, including laws that would ban the sale of motor fuels below cost or minimum markup. So this is an issue that the Federal Trade Commission, whether it's been Republican administrations, Democratic administrations, they have reviewed this across the states that do not have this. And here's what their findings are. They find that in states that have a minimum markup law, we have higher prices for consumers. In the states that do not have a minimum markup law, they have not found anti-competitive predatory pricing in those states. And in addition, the Federal Trade Commission has also said that these types of laws are unnecessary to protect against predatory pricing. Both the Federal Trade Commission, the Department of Justice Antitrust Division, state attorney generals, and private parties are able to enforce other laws, both at the federal and state level, that prevent against predatory pricing. Also want to talk about a study that was done by the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, and they found that minimum markup laws have no effect on the number of small business retailers in a state, nor do they have an impact on the number of gas stations in a state. I understand, you know, why petroleum marketers would like to have a law that protects their margins from price competition. I think any industry would like to have a law like that, but I think we have to focus on our laws here in the state of Minnesota being there to protect consumers. And the reason I'm so passionate about this issue is from conversations I've had with constituents who over the last couple of years have really been struggling with the cost of inflation. I had the chance to talk to a constituent earlier this week who her only income is getting a Social Security check. And she knows the price of gas at every single pump in town because every single penny impacts her budget. And even if this bill just saves a few cents per gallon to Minnesota consumers, that's hundreds of millions of dollars in savings over time. And so I appreciate the discussion on this bill and would encourage members to oppose the amendment so that we can get this law off the books and get savings back to Minnesota consumers.
Thank you, Senator Asmussen. Senator Dames.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And in response, certainly, Senator Asmussen certainly done his research. One of the things I just like to bring up is it's really hard to make comparisons with all these other states and this, that, and the next thing because of the fact that every state has a lot of different fuel and gasoline statutes and things that apply to it. And Minnesota is, in a sense, an outlier on a lot of that. So I understand where Senator Asmussen is coming from, but I would urge the support for this because this is going to be a major issue for rural Minnesota if we repeal that statute, and it's going to, over a period of time, it's going to be an issue. Thank you, members.
Thank you, Senator Dames. Senator Frentz.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members. Thank you, Senator Rasmussen, for the comments. Madam Chair, I do have a question for Senator Rasmussen, if he would yield.
Senator Rasmussen, will you yield for a question? He will.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Senator Rasmussen. I'm with you, Senator Rasmussen. We're trying to figure out what's better for the people that live in our district. You said you spoke to the retailers in your district. Can I ask what the consensus was of the retailers in your district on an amendment like this?
Senator Rasmussen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Senator Frentz, for the question. Definitely had conversations with retailers who, you know, are concerned around you know, what this could mean, and they've been told by folks that, you know, this could threaten their business model. When I've had longer conversations, a lot of them, you know, don't really, you know, foresee the type of predatory, anti-competitive behavior that would ultimately put them out of business. But I've had lots of conversations with them about this, and there are concerns. But ultimately, I go back to any industry would love to have a minimum markup on the products and goods that they sell. And so I understand why they're concerned with it. I understand why the petroleum marketers are opposed to it. But when I have conversations with them, none of them told me that this is going to put them out of business.
Thank you, Madam
Chair.
Senator
Frenz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Senator Rasmussen.
Any other discussion? Senator Klein.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. And I have been convinced this has been a great debate this session, by the way, to learn about this decades-old law and its implications for consumers. And both sides have had compelling arguments. I have been convinced by the arguments of Senator Rasmussen, and I encourage a no vote on the amendment.
All right. Thank you, members. Any further discussion? All right. On the A3 amendment, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Nay.
No. The amendment does not pass. Are there any other amendments? All right. Seeing none, Senator Klein, any closing comments?
Members, thank you for considering the bill, and with your permission, I'll make the motion that Senate File 2219, as amended, be passed and referred to general orders in the Senate floor.
All right, on Senator Klein's motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Oh. Oh, I heard a roll call request. We'll take a roll call.
Senator Klein.
Aye.
Senator Sieber.
Aye.
Senator Dames.
No.
Senator Duckworth. Senator Frenz.
Aye.
Senator Wicklin. Senator Howe. Senator Lantz. Senator Zhang.
Aye.
Senator Rasmussen.
Aye.
Senator Duckworth. Senator Wicklin. Senator Howe. Senator Lantz.
There being five ayes and one no, the motion passes and the bill is on its way. Thank you very much. Anything else? All right, there being no further business before the committee, we are adjourned. Thank you.